ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If I can just help make someone's day a bit better, help them take the next step, sideways step, whichever, so long as it's not going backwards, then I've done some good in no matter how small it is.
Tormented by the stark isolation and challenges of life in the remote outback, soon we'll meet the men and women of the land who are finding inspiration to overcome their mental health struggles and now want to help others to do the same. And champion race mare Winx became a household name. Now her first foal is ready to be auctioned. And there's talk the global interest could see a record price paid.
She became the greatest filly mare in Australian history. And, you know, the world knew about Winx.
I'm Alex Hyman and this is Australia Wide, coming to you from Whadjuk country, Perth. But firstly, a live export company has today reported a significant number of cattle have died on board a ship travelling to Indonesia. Mark Harvey Sutton is the CEO of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council, and this afternoon he's spoken to National Rural reporter Kath Sullivan.
Well, our understanding is, Kath, that there was a shipment that departed from the Northern Territory, and on board that vessel, a significant number of animals became sick. The initial thoughts are that it is actually botulism, but that is all to be confirmed. The Department of Agriculture is conducting its investigation now to confirm that, which will include testing and treating cattle as necessary. But obviously, we're very concerned by this. The export is working very closely with the department at the moment. We'll learn more over time.
Would this be the largest report of mortality on a cattle shipment from Australia that you can recall?
In my recollection, yes, it would. But it does seem that there were some extraordinary circumstances that have seen this event take place. And obviously, we need to get to the bottom of why that has all occurred.
Can you tell us how many cattle have died on the voyage?
Your initial estimates of over 100 is correct to my understanding. But final numbers are all to be confirmed as through that Department of Agriculture process. But I should emphasise, Kath, that it was the exporter that self-reported this. They've been very clear and transparent about this issue all the way through, and they are working very closely with the Department of Agriculture.
Do you know where the cattle were from?
My understanding is the cattle were from the Northern Territory, and that's the process that the department is looking into now. So I can only go on what I understand, but that's my understanding.
And are you concerned about what this could mean for trading relations with the Indonesian market?
Look, it's our objective and the Department of Agriculture's objective to be very clear and transparent with our Indonesian trading partners. I know that the Department of Agriculture has reached out to colleagues in Indonesia and has explained the situation and also the circumstances that would have led to these deaths. And they are working very cooperatively and they have given an undertaking to be very transparent and open with Indonesia, which would be our expectation as well.
Do you have an understanding about what might happen to the remaining cattle that were part of this shipment?
No, I don't. And that will all have to be determined. It's all very early days, Kath, but we will certainly be working through that and the exporter will as well as this progresses. We are very confident, as is the Australian government, that our disease-free status is maintained. There is no concerns about that, and we are undertaking every effort alongside DAF to give that reassurance to our markets.
That's Mark Harvey Sutton, CEO of the Australian Livestock Exporters Council, speaking there with our reporter Kath Sullivan. And the Federal Department of Agriculture has issued a brief statement saying prior to departure, the department undertook pre-export inspections to ensure the livestock met requirements under the Export Control Act and importing country requirements. There's no suggestion that exotic animal disease is involved, and the department is investigating the incident as per normal procedures and as a matter of priority. It also says Australia remains free of exotic animal diseases such as lumpy skin disease and foot and mouth disease.
ABC Australia Wide.
And you are with me, Alex Hyman. It's great to have your company. A buyer in the troubled Crownview Apartments in Wollongong is calling on the state government to provide better protections for home buyers as the developer refuses to refund her deposit. Last week, the New South Wales Building Commissioner issued a third defect notice against the 149-unit complex on Crown Street. Tracy Cockton put down a 5% deposit on a $560,000 unit in early 2022, and despite concerns about the building's flaws, has been unable to get her money back. Kelly Fuller reports.
Tracy Cockton had her heart set on buying a one-bedroom study apartment to share with her teenage daughter.
Yeah, and a brand-new apartment, you know, something that I've never lived in an apartment, especially a brand-new one, and we were so excited. But, yeah, that's since changed.
Hoping to move in July 2022... A series of major defects identified by the building commissioner has stopped the developer.
They've just kept on extending it and just using excuses when they haven't built to the Australian standards, you know. So, as far as I'm concerned, he's broken the contract.
Her efforts to challenge deadlines that were repeatedly pushed back were rejected by the developer. Her lawyer says the only recourse is through the courts, something she can't afford.
I've had many nights where I've just cried myself to sleep, you know. So it's impacted me, it's impacted my daughter. I want it over and done with and I want my money back. Simple as that.
Last week, the Building Commissioner, David Chandler, issued a third defect notice against the Crownview Wollongong development.
There are defects in the way that the drainage is set up on the balconies. There appears to be non-compliant tilings in the bathrooms, which would be the source of potential water leaks in the building. So there's a range of issues. We have been unable to identify whether the glazing in the building is compliant on the handrails. So we've basically added this to the list of other issues that we've asked the developer to report back to us on, to say we want some independent reports on these matters, and we will then, if there are confirmed defects that we've identified, then we'll require those to be rectified before we would consider lifting any orders.
Mr. Chandler says he's all but lost trust in the developer.
Look, I think this developer's ability to have trust has moved on. Whoever's going to be in charge of that job going forward, whether it's the developer or the developer's financier, and that's yet to be sorted out by them because that's a matter for them to resolve, is that I'm personally not comfortable with advice from the developer. In particular, a developer's representative advised me that if any owners at this stage of the cycle of this building had requested their deposits back, that they would give them back. That appears not to be a reliable piece of information. So these things, when they all go together, cause me to sort of be very concerned about any form of trust. So right now, I don't have very much trust in the building, and I don't have very much trust in anything that the developer has to say to me.
The developer, Crownview Oxford, has not responded to the ABC's request for comment. Tracy Cockton says the New South Wales government needs to offer consumers more protection.
They need to be able to protect us in a case like this, because not everyone can afford to go to Supreme Court. So if the developer's saying no, he's not going to refund the money, who's going to make him? It's just frustrating.
The commissioner says his hands are also tied.
It may well be that there needs to be some change in the law. But that's, I get back to the fact that owners should make sure they get independent legal advice before they sign these contracts, because an open-ended sunset clause, in my view, would be advice that a normal and qualified lawyer would say to a consumer, cross that clause out or don't sign the contract.
Sydney-based property lawyer Jared Zack says changes to sunset clauses could have unintended consequences.
The problem is if you legislate to be able to get developers to tear up contracts so that developers lose their deposit, their banks are going to be furious, and that's going to put some stress on that market. But by the same token, mums and dads probably should, in those circumstances, be permitted to go and look elsewhere to buy a property.
He says the government could step in a different capacity.
Many people would say that this is a problem caused by the state government and their lack of foresight. And potentially, as I said, buy out these contracts, allow mum and dads to get their deposit back and to go, you know, invest somewhere else, somewhere where it's more ready to go, and give those projects perhaps the time that they're needed to basically address all these defects issues. It's not a bailout really, because you know the government will be, if they step in and buy these deposits, they will effectively be acquiring an asset, and they can actually resell it. They might even resell it for a profit. We don't know.
The building commissioner says he's so concerned about what he's seeing across the industry, he wants to establish permanent offices in several regional centres, including the Illawarra, Hunter and Mid North Coast, and he's urging buyers in the Wollongong complex to stay calm.
I can't do anything specifically to help you, but you will be constantly in my mind as I walk my way through this particular complex matter.
Wollongong reporter Kelly Fuller with that story. Let's head west now. Bush poetry, long-distance outback swimming and soap making don't appear to have much in common. But for graziers in remote outback New South Wales, each has been invaluable in helping deal with isolation, drought, heat and financial pressures. Broken Hill reporter Bill Ormond explains. And a warning, this story discusses suicide and depression.
How could a man who has it all be so unhappy and feel so small?
Reading poetry at his homestead, outback grazier Wes Herring reflects on his past. He thinks back to a dry and dusty day in April 2016 where he almost ended his life.
About 400 yards from where we sit is where I almost ended my life with a 150 grain 30-30 projectile.
You're not gonna get over it up there, are you?
I don't know, I'm gonna have a look here.
For Wes, the daily grind had ground him down.
We were shearing, I was getting a real pizzling, and with sheep everywhere and nothing was going to plan, and it was just all getting too hard. I had the bank on me back and some other outside pressures of telling me I'm doing shit wrong and stuff, and I just went, you know what, I'm over this. Sat in the wheel of the motorbike and put the rifle under my chin.
Wes still doesn't know why he didn't pull the trigger, but he's thankful he didn't.
You come back here and think, well, there could have well been a cross about the front of this motor car.
Years of therapy and support from family and friends helped Wes through dark periods, but it was writing poetry which empowered him the most.
I'm giving my all to pass this test and find who I was and conquer this quest. To return once again to the lands I survey and do what I love and enjoy every day.
Wes isn't on his own. In 2023, the National Farmer Wellbeing Report found almost half of farmers surveyed had thoughts of self-harm or suicide. The suicide rate for farmers is 60% higher than the general population, according to data released by the National Rural Health Alliance in 2021.
The man I've become no longer suits all. I no longer stand bulletproof and tall.
A few years ago, Wes began sharing his poems through social media, and he's been overwhelmed by the response. He's had thousands of people connect with his words, and he hopes that by sharing his struggles and vulnerability, others suffering in silence might find the words to ask for help.
If I can just help make someone's day a bit better, help them take the next step, sideways step, whichever, so long as it's not going backwards, then I've done some good in no matter how small it is.
Hundreds of kilometres southeast of Wes's place on a cold and chilly morning, one of his biggest supporters prepares to take a dip in his backyard. Grazier Brendan Cullen manages Carr Station, which backs onto lake speculation. It's one of nine in the iconic man-made Menindee Lake system located 1,000 kilometres west of Sydney along the Darling River. Swimming has been the 50-year-old's salvation. It began with an ambitious goal of completing the gruelling 30-kilometre English Channel crossing solo, a feat he achieved in 2022.
Swimming is paramount to how I operate.
If you're having a mundane week or a day or whatever it may be, the one thing that's going to keep pulling you out of the gutter is a good hard slog, either in the pool or out in the lakes. I mean, you know, the environment that we're in at the moment is fairly special.
For years, Brendan unknowingly struggled with depression, focused so heavily on rain forecasts and selling off stock during the most recent drought, he suffered silently.
I probably spent half my life looking behind me instead of looking in front of me, and a lot of thoughts you were building up, and I had no idea how to get rid of them. And to be truthful, I think I was exhausted both through the drought, what was going on in my head, and in the end, it wasn't uncommon when I'd go to Broken Hill and someone would say, geez, you look tired, you look exhausted.
Eventually, Brendan walked into Broken Hill Hospital looking for help, and he says he felt free after being diagnosed with depression. Swimming grounds him, and his journey has led him to becoming an ambassador for Lifeline.
I created a toolbox for myself, and from that point on, I've carried that around with me today. And if I escalate in any areas that I feel that might be pushing me down an ordinary path, I keep reverting back to that toolbox.
And while Brendan's toolbox is in his head, Brit Anderson's is located in her workshop and soap-making studio. Brit lives on Simbrick Vale Station, hours northeast of Broken Hill, and understands the isolation of drought better than most. She spent more than 2 years alone while her husband Mick was away at their other property down in Victor Harbour, 750 kilometres away across the border in South Australia.
He was at the farm and I was here with the girls because there was still about 1,000 head here, thinking that he'd be only away for a few months, and it ended up being 2.5 years.
It pushed Britt to the limit, but it's also when she discovered her passion for soap and candle making. For Britt, an afternoon in the workshop can erase the stress of rural life, even as the price of sheep and goat has fallen dramatically over the last couple of years.
It can turn the day around. When you've been dragging bogged sheep out of a dam that's about to go dry, and then you walk into that soap studio and there's the beautiful smells and the pretty soaps and all the different colours, it does lift your spirits.
Britt and Brendan hope by sharing their stories, it brings greater awareness to the challenges graziers face on a daily basis, while highlighting the importance of having an outlet to release the pressures of life on the land.
And I couldn't stress hard enough and long enough about trying to find something different in your life that can help fill your bucket.
While Wes is committed to keep reading and writing his poetry, he has no plans to stop anytime soon.
I hope these words can save just one. I'll keep posting my words, my work's never done.
That was grazier Wes Herring ending that story by Bill Ormond. And if you or anyone you know needs help, you can always call Lifeline on 13 11 14. That's 13 11 14. To Queensland now. A crocodile that stalked residents for months along a North Queensland river has been captured and removed. Wildlife officers say the 3.9 metre croc posed a risk to the lives of locals and their animals. From Townsville, Lily Nuttling has the story.
Years, the crocodile has been a familiar sight for residents living at Cordelia on the banks of the Herbert River. But long-time resident Lawrence Perticato says the animal recently started getting a little too close for comfort.
Late last year, December, and then especially January, his behaviour changed dramatically and started to come for us and stalk us on the riverbank here and taking a few of the chooks of the neighbours. So yeah, it's been a really testing time.
Even mowing his lawn became risky.
I was just sort of mowing the top part of my bank, keeping a good distance from him. But yeah, he sort of come out and sort of thrashed and had to sort of go at me while I was mowing. So, you know. And I do a lot of fishing here in the river and haven't been able to put my boat in because it was just too dangerous. I've lived on the river here all my life and become accustomed to crocodiles. With this guy stalking us the way he has been, it's become, you know, very concerning.
Mr. Perticato reported the animal to Queensland's Department of Environment, Science and Innovation. Wildlife Officer Ella Meave says it was quickly flagged a problem crocodile.
3.9 metres is a big animal, so that absolutely poses a significant risk to human life. Hearing reports of that animal stalking wildlife or people along the bank is certainly a bit concerning to the department.
But their efforts to use a floating trap were hampered by wet weather and flooding.
We've been trying to trap this animal for a couple of months. We've been going up there 2 to 3 times a week, just trying to change the bait over and maintain that trap.
Eventually, the crocodile was caught in a gated trap on the banks of the river and hauled in by wildlife officers yesterday.
Keep going. Keep going. Keep going.
Whoop. It didn't come quietly.
He was not very thrilled. He was very vocal. There was a lot of growls and bellows that he was making, but once he was all in the box, he was pretty quiet from there. We are all very relieved that we have now removed that animal.
The crocodile has been dubbed Herbie by one of the locals in honour of the river it roamed. It'll now be taken to a crocodile farm or zoo. For Lawrence Perticato and his neighbours, the experience has been a wake-up call about the risks of living in croc country.
Doesn't matter whether you've lived on the river all your life or near rivers or waterways, just be croc-wise all the time because, you know, their numbers are spreading and even their numbers in this river have sort of multiplied exponentially over the last 20 years. But they're just becoming more game now, basically. They're not scared of us.
That's Cordelia resident Lawrence Perticato, ending that story by Lily Nuttling in Townsville. And finally here on Australia Wide, champion race mare Winx has become a household name, notching up 25 Group 1 wins and a world record 33 race winning streak, up until she was retired in 2019. Now her first foal is ready to be auctioned at a public sale in just 2 weeks. With the looks and attitude of her mother, the filly's sale has attracted global interest, and the price could break all-time thoroughbred yearling records. Amelia Bernasconi visited the filly at Coolmore Stud and spoke to her connections ahead of the big sale.
She's been described as having spark and sass and mirroring many characteristics of her mother. For now, she's been dubbed Little Winx, the first foal out of the mighty mare sired by a champion in his own right, Piero. At 18 months old, this filly will hit the sale ring in just 2 weeks' time, a sale many thought may never happen. Part owner Peter Tighe says it was just the right time.
Oh, it's not my decision alone. I mean, the owners, three groups that own it, you know, our family, Peter's family and the Tighe family, and we discussed and just came up, thought it was the right thing to take it to the market and give everybody the opportunity to be involved, not just keep her for ourselves. And we can still be involved again. We're not shut out from buying back into her and things like that. So it was a great opportunity for the ownership group to stay involved if they wanted or not. But, happy to take it to the market and the next chapter in the Winx story.
Well, the Winx story has been incredible. I mean, can you recap some of your highlights with this incredible mare?
Look, we were on this incredible journey for 5 years. We hardly were at home. We travelled the world. You know, she took us to places that we'd never been. We met hundreds and hundreds of people, made lots and lots and lots of friends. There's so many good memories that, you know, it doesn't do it justice to single them out, but the racing in Australia and the way she was adored by not only the racing public, but just everybody that jumped on board, and such a great time. And to this day, it's still a great time. You know, she's really become an icon of racing and folklore in Australia now.
Poor Winx did have a really challenging start to the broodmare career. How do you feel now seeing this stunning filly that she's produced, and she's ready to start training? Yeah. Not far off.
No, it's not all smooth sailing with these sort of things, with the breeding. And she had a bit of a checkered start. We did lose the first foal, but in saying that, we gave her time to get over that, both physically and mentally, because we wanted her to be, you know, if she was going to be right to breed, we were happy to breed, but if she wasn't, we wouldn't have. But she came through it good. She had a great 12 months off. We put her into a service with Piero, and we've ended up with this lovely filly, and we couldn't be more happy, and Winx was just an absolute super mum.
Prepared at Coolmore, stud principal Tom Magnus says the Winx story has come full circle.
It's really exciting for the staff on the farm. Obviously, they fold Winx down here. We raise Winx here. That just became the stuff of legend. You know, she became the greatest filly mare in Australian history. And, you know, the world knew about Winx. Australia does it like nowhere else in the world, in that you could walk down the street and say to somebody, who is Winx? And they would tell you. That doesn't happen anywhere in the world.
Tell us about her filly. You mentioned that Chris Waller, who of course trained Winx, has been keeping an eye to this filly as well.
Yeah, Chris comes up here to see the horses a lot, and he's paid particular attention to this filly. He always comes up to see Winx, and he agrees. It's a really lovely filly. She's improving all the time. She's got a lot of characteristics similar to her mother. You know, there's going to be a limited edition, I'd say, as we know. But it's a huge thing. And I think that I said to somebody that they think Taylor Swift going to Sydney was big. Wait till you see this Winx going to England. This is going to be another level again.
With global interest, the filly is expected to break records. By just how much remains to be seen. The filly yearling record stands at $2.6 million. The all-time yearling record was paid for a Black Caviar half-brother in 2013. That price tag was $5 million. Inglis Bloodstock Chief Executive Sebastian Hutch says the only way to describe this sale is unprecedented.
Winx is just the most extraordinary racehorse, not just in a domestic context, but in an international context. You know, 25 Group 1s, winning streak of 33 consecutive races, that's extraordinarily rare in any sport. So it follows through, certainly in Bloodstock, that a female offspring or any offspring of a mare of that quality would be hugely desirable. It's made all the more appealing by the fact that female offspring of a mare of her quality are just rarely, if ever, offered at public auction. And I think that's been a huge factor in driving the number or the volume of interest in this filly.
The final price tag will be eye-watering to just the average Joe, but you speak about the value that people will see in this filly. What are you ballparking her sale price at?
I'm absolutely not ballparking anything. I've sort of tried to park that idea to the back of my mind the whole way through. At this juncture, it's something that anybody who's serious about investing in quality bloodstock should be considering carefully. You know, the owners are very much of a mindset that are going to the sale with the intention to sell. So while people speculate as to figures, you know, you've got to be in it to win it.
Amelia Bernasconi reporting there. And that is Australia-wide for this Tuesday. I'm Alex Hyman. Thanks so much for your company this evening. I'll be back again with you tomorrow. Hope you can join me then. Have a wonderful evening. Cheerio.
ABC Listen.